This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Well, they can't have it both ways. If it's completely new, if it's completely unnatural, it should be labeled. People should have a right to know what's in their food. It's very simple.
Like it or not, genetically engineered foods make up a significant portion of our nation's food supply. Approximately 93% of all U.S. soy and canola and 86% of our corn are genetically modified. There are informed positions on both sides of the debate around genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, pertaining to the health and long-term safety of these food products. But many assert that as long as this debate still rages, consumers deserve to know whether they're eating and serving foods that have been genetically modified. The United States is one of the only industrialized nations that does not provide its consumers this assurance. In Europe, all products containing over 0.9% genetically modified organisms must be labeled as GMO products. Similar laws are in 61 other countries, including Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. Here in the U.S., though, there's no such standard. While 14 states have introduced legislation on GMO labeling, the most significant movement on the GMO labeling front up to this point has been California's Proposition 37, which will be voted on this November 6th. The proposition, which would allow consumers to make informed choices about what they're eating, has been under fire by a well-funded campaign. The No on 37 assault is backed by major agribusiness corporations who are trying hard to convince voters that adding one line to ingredient labels will significantly increase their food bills. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak again to Charles Margulis, the Communications Director for the Center for Environmental Health, a nonprofit that's been a staunch supporter of Proposition 37, as well as Ashley Hathaway, a San Francisco-based nutritional therapist who's also an advocate for more transparency in food labeling. I'd like to welcome back to Sea Change Radio, Charles Margulis. He's the Communications Director for the Center for Environmental Health. Charles, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
First, why don't you tell our listeners what Prop 37 is?
It's a simple, common sense measure here on the ballot in California that says genetically engineered foods should be labeled as such. Consumers have a right to know what's in their food, and this is something that dozens of countries around the world have. There's no reason we shouldn't have this in the United States. Unfortunately, the FDA has been silent on this issue, so it's up to the states. And California is looking to be the first state in the nation to require labels so that people know when they're eating genetically engineered food.
And why is this important for the rest of the country and not just for Californians?
Well, California is obviously a huge market. Our economy in California, our food industry in California is the largest in the country. And as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. It would be the first state in the nation to require GMO labels. And, once food companies have labeling here in California, it's much more likely and will be a lot easier for them to do so everywhere else.
This sounds like a no-brainer to a lot of people, but there's been quite a lot of pushback. And when large corporate interests are involved, there's going to be an information and a disinformation campaign. Can you tell us a little bit about the no on Prop 37 ads that California residents may have been seeing on their TVs lately?
Sure. I mean, the pushback is entirely from industry. There's no grassroots pushback at all. I mean, every poll over the last 20 years show Americans and Californians want GE labels to be required on food. The industry knows that. They have a huge spending advantage, which has been talked about a lot. What hasn't been talked about as much is that they also have a huge advantage in that they're allowed to lie. I mean, unfortunately, that's how initiative campaigns work, is that, one side, a grassroots side, puts a common sense measure on the ballot, and the industry that opposes that measure spends the last 2 weeks of the campaign spending millions of dollars on TV and radio ads that simply lie about what's going on. And unfortunately, there's no repercussions for that. I mean, even if a company like Monsanto, which is funding the anti-choice campaign against 37, even if they're caught like they were recently lying about an FDA statement in a mailer that they sent out to thousands of Californians where they claimed that The FDA said something that the FDA never said about Prop 37 and implied that the FDA opposes the measure, which they don't. They've never taken a position on it. And they illegally use the FDA symbol on that mailer. Even if they do all those steps and even if the FDA fines them at some point for doing that, they don't care. I mean, a fine from the FDA of a few thousand dollars when they're spending millions of dollars over a couple of weeks to defeat this measure is nothing to them. So that's just an example of how, you know, it's not just a money advantage. People always talk about the money advantage, and they have a massive money advantage in this effort. But it's the advantage that they have that they can lie and simply tell voters things that are not true in an effort to persuade them against a measure that 90% of Americans want.
More specifically, why don't you tell some of the bigger whoppers coming from the No on 37 campaign?
Sure. So the FDA was one. There are a few where they've already been caught. So another one where they were caught was when they, in one of their first TV ads, their expert spokesperson against Prop 37 was a guy named Henry Miller. And they identified him as Dr. Henry Miller of Stanford University. Well, the fact is he doesn't work for Stanford University. He's not a professor there. He's affiliated with the far right wing Hoover Institute and has for decades worked on behalf of the pesticide industry, the tobacco industry, the nuclear power industry, and any other right-wing cause that the Hoover Institute's worked on. When Stanford University found out about that, they demanded that those ads be pulled and changed. Another one where they were recently caught was when they claimed that the Academy of Nutritionists opposed Prop 37. The Academy has no such position, and interestingly put out a press release where they said voters need accurate information to have an informed choice in this election, which is almost exactly what the Prop 37 proponents say, which is that consumers need informed choice when they're shopping, and that's why we need GMO labels.
That was the thing that really struck me when I saw the ads, where there was no mention of genetically modified organisms, genetically engineered foods. It was purely, this is going to cost people more money, and they show like food stamps, or they show images of people worrying about their bills. It's much more of a, this is going to hit taxpayers and hardworking parents right where in their wallets. So, Charles, let's take a quick listen to one of the No on 37 ads it's running.
How much would Prop 37's food labeling scheme cost? Billions to repackage and remake thousands of common food products just for California, increasing a typical family's grocery bills by $400 per year. It's all costs, no benefits. Look into the facts.
Why don't you kind of break down the language that is injected into this campaign?
Sure. The GMO industry, almost 20 years ago, did focus groups and found out that the words genetically engineered, genetically modified, GMO, are terms that alert people, that concern people when they hear about GMO food and genetically engineered food. So they'll never use those terms. In this campaign, they've gone even farther and don't talk about food at all. They simply talk about, as you said, food costs going up and what they call misleading labeling. The idea that food costs would go up is simply nonsense. There's not a shred of evidence to show that food costs will go up when there's GMO labeling required. The simple evidence for that is dozens of countries around the world where GMO labels have been required, and not a single instance where they can show that in any of those countries food costs have gone up. If they could, they would. They would be showing that left and right, but they don't. Instead, what they do is they put together these quasi-academic studies that make ridiculous assumptions to make the argument that, food companies will simply have to turn to expensive organic and non-GMO ingredients, and they'll have to pass those costs on to consumers, and therefore your food bill will go up by hundreds of dollars a year. It's simply nonsense. Anyone living in Europe, in Japan, in Russia or China, where they have required GMO labeling, will tell you we've had that labeling for a decade and our food costs haven't increased at all. I mean, the other example is right here in the United States, when nutrition labels were first required on our foods. As you know, you walk into the supermarket, any packaged food is required to have a nutrition facts label on it.
We would never know what niacin or riboflavin were if it weren't for these labels, right?
Or cholesterol or sugars and all that stuff that's broken down on those nutrition fact labels is required by the federal government. It has been for 2 decades. When those requirements were first discussed and argued about, the food industry came out and said this will cost consumers hundreds of dollars a year and poor people will starve and food costs will go up. And none of that happened. Food companies changed their labels overnight when they want to. For example, a couple of years ago, the FDA allowed labeling claims about whole grains that you see now and then, especially on cereals and other whole grain foods, that whole grains are part of a heart healthy diet and that sort of thing. The day after the FDA allowed that claim, I went into the supermarket and found a half a dozen products that had that label on the package. So the food companies can change their labels overnight when they want to, when there's a cost advantage to them or a competitive market advantage. When there's a labeling change that they don't like, they claim, oh, this is going to make food costs go up. It never happens. It never has. It never will. It's a complete non-issue in the GMO debate.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready cornbread tomorrow night. Cornbread, you ain't straight. Beans. You better wake up or I'll gas you gate. Been in this pot.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Charles Margulis. He's the communications director for the Center for Environmental Health. Explain what the GMO label would actually look like and what kind of a transformation a consumer might see on a can of soup.
Well, if that can of soup contained ingredients from GMO corn or soy, which are the most common GMO crops grown, the label would say contains genetically engineered ingredients or contains a genetically engineered ingredient, or it might say...
So one line. It's not like they're breaking down every single ingredient and which ones have genetically modified organisms and which don't. Is that right?
That's correct. So the package simply has to say that this contains genetically engineered or genetically modified ingredients.
So this is like when saccharin first was shown to cause cancer in laboratory rats, that they had to put that warning on there. I'm sure there was a pushback from the saccharin makers at that point, right? But this was not something that was going to increase the cost of saccharin to people. Sweet and Low didn't all of a sudden jump from 10 cents a package to 20.
Right. An even better example are things like artificial colors or artificial flavors. Foods that have artificial colors or artificial flavors have to say so on the label. That's required. Now, the GMO industry will say, well, you're just requiring labels on something that's safe. Well, nobody ever said artificial colors or artificial flavors are not safe. In fact, we have much stronger safety requirements for any new artificial color or any new artificial flavor than we have for GMOs, where we have no safety requirements at all. There's not a single safety test that's required for a new GMO food to be put on the market. Monsanto could develop a new GMO food tomorrow, put it in your food the next day, and the FDA could do nothing to stop them. That's very different than artificial colors and flavors, which have to go through a battery of tests to show they're safe, to demonstrate they're safe, before they're put on the market. And yet those still have to carry labels. Why? It's not because they're not safe. It's because consumers need to know that information. Consumers have demanded that that's something they want to know. That's a material fact. That's the legal term. A material fact that consumers need to make an informed choice in the supermarket. A GMO is another material fact that consumers need to know. And the FDA has said, oh, well, we would love to require labels, but we don't have the authority. Well, that's simply not true. Any change in a food that's a material fact can trigger FDA action. They've simply denied that they have that authority without taking the reality into account. You know, they've also claimed that any food that's labeled all natural would be subject to lawsuits under the GMO labeling law because it prohibits all natural labels on any GMO foods. It's simply not the case. When their so-called academic put out a paper on this, we challenged that paper, and an NPR story about it went back to her, and she was forced to retract the statement.
to the garden and I found a worm and I put it in a jar. Thought I'd take it outside for a walk, but it wouldn't go that far. I asked my mommy, can we take a drive, but it didn't much like the car. Now I'm gonna give it back, gonna give it back, gonna give it back to nature. Gonna give it back, gonna give it back, gonna give it back to nature.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with Charles Margulis from the Center for Environmental Health.
I saw in the ad they had a list of Nobel Prize laureates who are behind the No on 37 campaign, or at least agreed to have their names put on this ad. Do you think that the question posed to them was, do GMOs cause a significant threat or not? Or was the question put to them, should these labels be changed so that consumers can have greater choice? I mean, it's really in the language that you would ask a doctor who may be totally for GMOs, and no one's necessarily saying that these are poison and we should just have to avoid them. What the Yes on 37 campaign is about is, like, consumers should have a choice. Do you think that those doctors were given that similar choice?
I've heard a half a dozen or so debates on this issue in just the past couple of weeks. And in every single one of them, when the anti-choice proponent, whether it's a scientist, an academic, somebody from industry, is given that very direct question, why shouldn't consumers have a choice? They have no answer. They have no response. They go back to, well, this is anti-science. Well, this is written by trial lawyers. They go back to all kinds of nonsense that doesn't answer the question directly. Just simply a very simple statement. Shouldn't people have a right to know what's in their food? If it's genetically engineered, it's by definition different than the natural variety of that food. They go to the patent office as soon as they make these things and say, this is a brand new discovery that's patentable, that's something that we can claim we've invented and can have a patent on. Then they turn around and go to the FDA and they say, this is no different. It's just like any food that we've ever had before. Well, they can't have it both ways. If it's completely new, if it's completely unnatural, it should be labeled. People should have a right to know what's in their food. It's very simple.
And what's the difference for our listeners between modern GMOs and some of the first genetic modifications that were done in ancient cultures? Because this is not new in some respects, but in others, it's quite different.
It's completely different. So natural breeding only happens between closely related species under certain conditions that follow natural metabolic pathways. You can't naturally breed a fish and a tomato. The GMO industry likes to say, oh, we've been breeding crops for 10,000 years, and this is just like breeding. Well, you put a fish and a tomato in a room together, 10,000 years later, they're not going to breed.
A fish and a tomato walk into a bar.
Exactly, right? That's not going to happen. This technology, it works differently than conventional breeding does, and it has different risks than conventional breeding does. And even the FDA's own scientists said that in 1992 when they first started looking at this. And the scientists were overruled by the policy folks who said, the biotech industry is going to be the engine of the economy. We can't stand in their way with these cumbersome labeling regulations, so back off. And the scientists were forced to back off. But the scientific documents from the FDA are online for anybody who wants to look at them. And they said over and over again, this technology is different than natural breeding. It has different risks. It should be regulated differently. There should be batteries of safety tests required. There should be labeling required. And all of that was ignored.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Charles Margulis. He's the communications director for the Center for Environmental Health. Charles, you had mentioned that the No on Prop 37 well-moneyed interests had sunk their teeth in, and there's been a very well-funded campaign to try to defeat this proposition. Any polling that would reflect that it's working, and we're getting pretty close to the to election day here. What is the prospect now for Prop 37, in your opinion?
Well, the polling for this initiative has been typical for these kinds of initiatives. So grassroots initiatives typically start out with strong statewide support in the upper 60, 70%. And when the anti-campaign starts spending millions of dollars on TV and radio ads, which the grassroots campaign can't possibly match, that support starts to erode. And that's what's happening with Prop 37. So it's still in the over 50%, but it's getting much closer. This is going to be a very close ballot election. Everyone needs to come out. Everyone needs to understand this issue. Everyone needs to go online and look at the Yes on 37 campaign's website. Just Google Yes on 37. You'll check it out. California Right to Know. Check it out. Don't buy the industry lies that you see on TV. There's absolutely no truth that food costs will increase. There's no reason to fear that. There's absolutely no truth that this is going to be a boon for trial lawyers. There's no reason to fear that. There's absolutely no truth about loopholes in the law. In fact, the exemptions in the law are the kind of exemptions that industry always asks for. And it's funny, in other states, when they've had ballot initiatives for GMO labeling, the industry has criticized them because they don't have exemptions for certain businesses, like restaurants, for example, where you don't expect to see the same kind of labeling in a restaurant that you see in the supermarket. I mean, when was the last time you saw how much niacin is in something that you buy at a restaurant, right? That's not gonna happen. So there are common sense exemptions in the Prop 37 initiative so that businesses like restaurants aren't hurt. This is a common sense law. People should understand it. It's very straightforward, and vote yes on 37.
With California being such an important market, if it doesn't pass, if Prop 37 is defeated, what's next for GMO labeling campaign on a national scale? Do you expect this to be coming up on ballots in other states, or do you think it'll come back to California first, or could this be something that would be done on a federal level?
Well, there are already a couple of dozen other states considering GMO, either ballot measures or legislation in their state legislatures. So that's the good news. Regardless of what happens in California, other states are looking at this. Sooner or later, states are going to start adopting this. It's just a matter of time before the entire United States has GMO food labeling. It's just a question of, is California going to lead or follow? I'm still very hopeful that California is going to take the lead, but it's inevitable at this point. There will be GMO labeling.
It's always great to talk to you, Charles. Charles Margulis, he's the communications director for the Center for Environmental Health. Charles, thanks for being on Sea Change Radio.
All right, thank you.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Ashley Hathaway. She's a certified nutritional therapist and runs a private practice called San Francisco Nutritional Therapy. Ashley, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex. Thank you for having me.
So, in your practice, do you tell your clients to avoid genetically modified organisms, and why?
I guess the answer to that is that I don't tell them specifically, hey, listen, don't eat genetically modified food. But what I do is I encourage all my clients to eat real food. And what I mean by that is whole food in its natural state. And food that has been genetically modified is very far from food that's in its natural state. In the world of, you know, healing arts and nutrition and nutritional therapy, we truly believe that the body really can only maintain optimal health by eating foods from the earth in their natural state.
What kind of frustrations have you encountered in terms of labeling when you're trying to steer your clients into eating quote-unquote real foods?
The labeling has actually gotten a lot better, obviously, over the years, and there's a lot more transparency in the foods we're buying now. You know, a lot of us who do buy, you know, more natural products that do have labels or packaging have noticed that a lot of these food companies are starting to put little logos on their food that says, you know, non-GMO. This food is not genetically modified. You know, there's a lot more awareness of that, and there's a lot more transparency in the labels, which is great. But what's frustrating is that, well, there's a couple of frustrations when it comes to labels in my clients. One is that a lot of people claim that they read the labels, but they really don't. They sort of glance over them and they don't really see the details, or they don't read all the ingredients. There can be, you know, a long list of ingredients, and people usually read the first three and then they kind of forget about the rest. So that gets a little frustrating, but at least the information's there. But for me now, one of the most frustrating things is not knowing from some of these products if some of these ingredients have been genetically engineered. And, you know, that to me is a concern, and it's also a frustration.
What concerns you about genetically modified organisms in particular?
What happens when you genetically modify a food, the structure of the DNA sequence is totally different. It's unnatural. So what happens when that gets ingested in the body is that the body says, I think this is corn, but I don't recognize this DNA sequence of this corn. So I don't really know what to do with this corn. So then what happens is the body, literally, there's like an immune response to that. And the immune response really happens within the gut. So within our, you know, intestines and upper and lower GI tract, because 70 to 80% of our immune system is within our GI tract. So what happens is that there's an immune response that gets set off, and this will vary between, you know, individuals. Some people are more sensitive to it, some people aren't so sensitive, but this immune response creates inflammation. And inflammation in the body is very destructive, and it's disruptive to the regular functions of digestion.
How do you feel when you see a no on Prop 37 ad where all these doctors come out and say that GMOs are fine, and they put their seal of approval on the general category of genetically altered foods?
So for me, you know, it's an incredible frustration, and for these companies to simply put one line on their label. I mean, these food companies change their labels all the time. They're going to have 18 months to make that change if this passes. And, you know, it's one line on a label. It's not like they're going to have to redesign their packaging or anything like that. So this whole concept of it's going to cost families more money in the end with their shopping bill, it's simply not true. The crux of a lot of the frustration from people like me, you know, who care about people's health, these ads and this whole no campaign is they haven't even mentioned GMO. You don't even see the letters on any of those ads. It's just really off the mark.
Certified nutritional therapist Ashley Hathaway, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Mandrill, Louis Jordan, Alex Wise, Roy Rogers, and Norton Buffalo.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.